Scriptures comes from Psalm chapter 24, verses 1 and 2, found on page 392 in your Pew Bible. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world, and all who live in it. For he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. This is the word of the Lord.
Hi, church. Good morning. Really excited. For the last, what month is it? It's May. Since October, we've had a group from our church meeting every other week to study and learn about permaculture. And our service today is an opportunity. We want to just kind of catch everybody up to what we've been talking about in the conversation that we started together in the fall. But I first want to recognize everyone who has been a part of our core team. They've been studying all fall and winter and are committed to helping us throughout the summer, too. And so behind the scenes have been studying diligently. So if you're part of the core team, would you just stand up and give a wave? There's about 20 or so folks. So thank you to all of you. And as we're discussing today and you're hearing testimonies and stories and learning about what's going on, if you have questions, these are really good folks to ask questions of as they've been studying and learning together with us. Also, just want to take a step back and before we hear our testimonies today, define permaculture a little bit because it's a word we've been using a lot and we've done some defining of it, but it can be confusing. So permaculture is a kind of mashup of the words permanent and agriculture, later expanded to mean permanent and agriculture and permanent and culture. So it's a way of growing food and doing life that is not only sustainable but regenerative, meaning that we're not just keeping things at the status quo, but as we plant trees and we grow food, we're actually bringing life back to soil and water and plants and animals rather than the way that we have our lawns and do agriculture now, which destroys those things. So it's a really kind of amazing thing when we get back into it, a way that not only is good for us, but is good for all living things. And permaculture as a term was coined by a couple of Australians in the 1970s. And they were looking at the climate and looking at agriculture and the way that we do things and trying to find better ways. And so they drew a lot from traditional knowledge, combined it with modern science and technology to put together a set of design principles for bringing health back to our soil and waters. And with that said, it is a one way that, again, draws from traditional knowledge that is ancient and that does not belong to anyone. It is not specific to permaculture. It is not only in permaculture way. And it's a helpful way that we're finding right now. But we remember, as we said in our call to confession today, that there were people, especially on this land, who were living in right relationship to all things for centuries and centuries. So we acknowledge that, too, as we're doing this work.
And just want to name a couple of other things as we do this. And one is that there was knowledge that was lost in Europe at one point, and it comes out of a lot of trauma. During the feudal period was problematic for a lot of ways, but there was also still village life intact in a lot of places around Europe, and there was communal land access, and it was women who were keepers of the traditions, keepers of the traditional plant knowledge, and who held those things together within village. At one point in late feudalism, all of those things were systematically targeted and destroyed. That's the witch trials, going after those who were keepers of the traditional knowledge and the village leaders, often the grandmothers. The figures vary, but we're talking hundreds of thousands of women at that time. who were targeted and who were killed, and villages and communal life upended and destroyed. And one reason for this was the desire for privatization of land, communal land enclosures. So communal land was taken away. And so communal life was destroyed, and also access to land as a community that was a public good was also privatized, fenced off. And there was a lot of trauma during this period. Industrialization followed, and rapid changes as peasants were forced into cities and to work in industrial places. It was out of this context that there was a spillover in colonialism, in a looking for more land and the chance for profit now with the rise of capitalism. And it was out of that that settlers came to this land looking for land to settle, and at that point, not to nurture and steward in a communal way, but to make it productive for expansive extractive agriculture that could make a profit. That's the history here. And that when settlers came and they looked at what was happening here with all the trees and the wildlife and the prairies and everything, they couldn't see what was actually in front of them, which was a teeming, diverse, vibrant ecosystem that had been stewarded responsibly in a good way for thousands of years and that had the capacity to provide for many. Instead, they saw laziness and waste, which was the exact opposite of what was going on, and sought to make this land productive. And so today, we are the inheritors of that, and we are living in the midst, after 150 years here in Minnesota, of what has been created. There's a lot of talk right now what's going on in rural areas with agriculture, and those are important conversations. There needs to be a massive shift. But we're here in the city, and I just want to lift up one thing now before inviting Paul and soon back up, and that is how the modern lawn that has been constructed after World War II with the rise of the suburbs and all of that is one of the culprits in what's happening with our ecosystems. It's extremely problematic. Grass right now is the single largest irrigated ag crop in the U.S. We know the water issues we're facing. A lot of that goes to care for these pristine manicured lawns. And this grass. Grass does very little, I mean a few things, but very little in terms of offering something productive for the ecosystem. Shallow roots, requires a lot of water. It's not much of a carbon sink compared to other options. For a lot of homes, especially in the summertime, grass makes up 50 to 75% of our home water use. Lawnmowers, of course, take a lot of gas to mow, and it pollutes the air and everything to mow these lawns. And there are tens of millions of pounds of chemical fertilizer and pesticide used on our lawns because we just want this grass that we have. And we don't understand what weeds actually are, which is attempting to repair degraded soil because we're not doing anything to care for our soil. So there's so many issues with this. The issues are vast that we're facing. One small thing we can do is take responsibility for our own property, learn some other ways of relating to it, learn how to heal our soil, to build soil again, because all soil in urban and suburban areas and in rural areas is now really depleted, and learn how to capture the water, bring it back down into the ground, to filter it so it's not rushing off into the lake just below us and polluting our waterways. There's so many different issues here. So that's some of what, in this larger history, some of what we're trying to learn and figure out how to take responsibility for. Because if we can learn how to do it on this property, we can learn how to do it on our home properties if we happen to have access to land. And we can be an inspiration and inspire others to do that work as well. So that's what this is all about. That's what we're talking about today. And want to invite Sunbeck, I think, first, and then Paul, to share a little bit of their experience and what they've been learning, and then we'll talk more about the design itself during the offering time. Sunbeck?
Good morning.
Good morning,
Sunbeck. All right. seems so close to my face. Okay. I'm glad to be up here to share today about some of the things that I've been learning, that we've been learning together in our permaculture group. It has been a really eye-opening and kind of perspective-broadening, and it's just been a really great experience. sort of leading up to the actual reworking, you know, our church grounds and actually getting our hands dirty. So when we started our group meetings, you know, 6-7 months ago, the question was that we started with was, why are you here, and what do you know about permaculture? I honestly didn't know that much about permaculture, and I tried to craft a genuine answer to the question that didn't sound too self-serving and completely ignorant. One of the reasons I did join the group was that I really wanted to better understand what permaculture was, because of my daughter Claire, who was speaking so passionately about it and has cared so long about the environment and sustainability, and even took a semester full-time to learn about this. She was definitely one of my inspirations. But I think what I answered when I answered the group, I said something about wanting to learn a few tips on gardening, because growing your food is a noble endeavor, and some would say it may be our necessary future. But what I really wanted to know, as John so eloquently said, was that I wanted a nice-looking lawn with no weeds that was easy to take care of, but in an environmentally friendly way, because we are facing an ecological crisis. So how could I care for the environment and still get my pretty suburban lawn that my neighbors would approve of and that I could be proud of? I'm going to put my glasses back on. What I quickly learned was that permaculture was a far more comprehensive approach to restoring nature back to its original state, rebuilding the soil to its healthier, organic, nutrient-dense self, and returning plants and trees native to the area that would grow deep roots, that could hold water, attract birds and bees, and support wildlife and human life. The three permaculture principles that are at its core are earth care, people care, and fair share. So if you imagine a Venn diagram of those three circles and sort of overlapping. These principles work together to create a mutually beneficial, interrelated, interdependent ecosystem where there's little waste and maximum efficiency. This is efficiency and not expediency. The idea is to observe nature, to study its patterns, flow with its energy, work smarter, not harder, to work with nature and not against it. So the more I learned about what it means to care for the earth, to care for people, to share fairly, to spread resources to those who are in need, the more I saw the parallels with this community here at Church of All Nations, and honestly, it helped me to make more sense of our life together, our ministries, and to deepen my commitment to this place here, to our CAN family. So here are a few takeaways from my permaculture learnings and how it relates to our community. One, zones. Zone zero and zone one. Zones can be thought of as concentric circles that move outward from zone zero, or like ground zero. Zone zero being you or your home or your work. And then the zones radiating out from there, determined by the importance of function, the things you need to pay attention to. For instance, if you have chickens and you're gathering eggs every day, it would be best to have them close to your home because it's something you need to tend to daily. As opposed to maybe having a fruit tree that has sort of a seasonal yield, you might want that out one more zone, out in zone two. So you've got to know what is important to you, because you are your own zone zero. You know what you need, what needs your attention, and you know what needs your attention more frequently that needs to be close to you in that next zone. For us also, this church is zone zero. This is why we're trying to buy up more houses around the community close to the church. This is why we're living together. The natural opportunities to gather, to eat, to work, to help, to play together happen because of our close proximity to zone zero. By locating ourselves here, we are creating patterns and habits of interaction that can happen daily. This doesn't mean that the other zones that are farther away are not important. All the zones are important to the ecosystem, to the community. It simply means that proximity allows us more easily to share life together. Two, use and value diversity. Diversity in nature leads to greater resilience. Growing only one crop, for instance, leaves it vulnerable to disease, but having a diverse ecosystem is a healthier one. Having a diverse community here at CAN is life-giving. Our diversity is our strength. From various cultures, various ages and generations, various life stages and experiences, these are the things that challenge us, that change us, and make us stronger and wiser. Three, use edges and value the margins. This is a little different from diversity, but diversity can happen in the edges or at the edges. So where two ecosystems meet or at the edges or at the edges of our gardens, of our yards, our properties, this is where there's opportunity for new things to happen, for cooperation, or maybe even more growth or new growth. What we know is that important things happen at the intersections of where the margins are. We are a church that operates in the margins of our denomination. We are a community that has chosen to live in the margins, the fringe of what would be considered normal or standard in this society. We are a community that is marginal because we do not follow the script that those in the center of power have written. We choose to shape our own destiny, to learn and share with those that live, we choose to shape our own destiny to learn and share with those with those that we encounter. And we have also chosen to follow Jesus, who has lived his life in the margins, ministering to the margins of society, to the poor, the outcast, and the sick. This expression I like is called slow it, spread it, sink it. And this was kind of relevant to the work that we were doing outside this past week. This has to do with water creating swales. Water has its own energy and is a source of energy. It will go where it wants to, and often, because of the ways that we have interfered with it, becomes a problem, like the water that comes into the church and into the basement. how it rolls off our parking lot and straight down the hill into the lake, eroding land as it goes. We can't control water, but what we've learned is that we can redirect it. We can help direct where it goes. And one way is by digging swales to help the water to have a pattern to follow and slow it down as it's going over the areas. As we do that, we're spreading the water out more evenly, and then we're creating healthier soil by planting native plants that have deeper roots that can hold and catch more water. It's better all around. Instead of the waters running off, creating floods, also creating droughts. and I think that this is applicable to our relationships here with one another. People come with their own energies, sometimes healthy and other times too much. So left alone, it can wreak havoc. We can't control that, but we can redirect. We need to slow down to be present with one another. We can channel our energy into building and nurturing relationships that help us move into becoming stronger communities that are loving and trustworthy. This love and trust then helps us to develop deep roots in this place where we can be grounded, where we can hold one another and let God's love sink in. And a side note, there's a plug for Vacation Bible School. This year we've decided to write our own VBS program, and we are going to be concentrating on water. we're really excited about this, and to be able to teach our children from a very young age how to relate to water and the environment differently. And that's coming up in June. Personally, I have come to realize how much I am a product of the 80s, 90s, and so on. I'm a product of consumerism. My instinct and my orientation are towards convenience, fast food, pre-made mixes, machines that do the work for you to make it easier, lots of gadgets. I realized how afraid I was to grow my own food because I didn't know how, and I was afraid that I would ingest something that would be harmful or even fatal. I have internalized the idea that pretty packaged fruit and vegetables from a store are safer and better for me than anything I could grow for myself. I carried with me for a long time that the ability to buy food in the store is a sign of wealth as opposed to growing your own food, which is what I saw my immigrant mother do. I failed to see as a child that by her growing food, she was growing food that she ate in Korea that was harder to come by here in the U.S. And a very practical, why would you buy something that when you can grow it yourself? What I understand now is that convenience is not better, and convenience is not a sign of progress. Nature knows how to take care of itself. She knows how to share with her neighbors, how to store and use energy, how to heal herself. This, after all, is how God, the Creator, created her to be. This is not new. This way of relating to the land, sharing resources, and caring for all of creation was known by our native elders long ago. Ancient cultures practiced and passed on this wisdom, but it has been lost. Each plant, animal, insect, knows within itself what it needs to survive and thrive. There are abilities within it and also resources needed from others around them. We too are creatures created by God, part of the ecosystem. There's a saying by a Senegalese environmentalist that says, we won't save places we don't love. We can't love places that we don't know, and we don't know places we haven't learned. When I read Genesis 2, and God tells Adam to name the livestock and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air that were created from the very earth, I wonder if that was for Adam to know creation, to name it, and to love it. God also said there that it was not good to be alone. We were made for community. Working on the church grounds this past week was a revelation. It was hard work, but it was such good work. If I had to do it alone, I think I would have just curled up and disappeared. But knowing that we were working together made me work harder and with a much better spirit. Working together to create something that is better for the environment, that will eventually produce fruit and create places of sanctuary, was such a blessing. Actually digging in the soil, spreading compost that was rich, getting on my hands and knees was like joining hands with nature and really putting my roots down, knowing this place and loving it. I am committed to this place where we are striving for village renewal, and it was a step towards hope that all of us can create regenerative, life-giving spaces together for the benefit of all of creation. Work is so much community and for community. And I also realized that if you're going to take your place in nature, you can't be afraid to get dirty. So if you're going to get dirty, you might as well get really dirty. So the next Permaculture Work Day is Saturday, June 8th. Thank you for listening.
Wow. Good morning, church.
We as humanity are trying to connect to our sacred 13.7 billion year old self. We are working on differentiating from centuries of trauma that has been passed down into our bodies. Our little community is doing this work in multiple ways, and our permaculture project is a sacred part of helping us become one with God and God's universe. The earth is the Lord's, and all that is in it, the world, and those who live in it. I can tell if a cobra is upset by the way his or her body responds to me. I know the lizard means me no harm when they're eating bugs that are around our house. I see how the bee gets upset when I annoy him and he stings me. I know how the plants prefer touch in one way and feel pinched when I touch them another way. I know the land that I come from, and I feel her as I feel my mother. The land and my mother are the same. I grew up in South India, born and raised in one of the biggest cities in the world, in Chennai, Tamil Nadu. It is dirty, dusty, messy, and far more organic than the fake America we live in. I used to visit my ancestral home in the village almost every school break and went up to the rainforest and the mountains regularly. This was my normal. As I commune with all of you, I commune with my ancestors, spirits, plants, bugs, trees in the forest. God knows my family and helped raise me since I was a kid. I unfortunately grew up believing I was a crazy, dirty Indian. I was too much of a savage, and the civilized world is better. My father believed it too, and tried to instill in me the childish values of Western civilization. He is an Indian man-child and a broken human being, and in turn, tried to break me and our family. When I was 5 years old, my father was probably 3 times my size. When he had a bad or difficult day at work, he would come home and beat me up for perceived slights. The reason he would give me that was that I was being bad. When he got drunk, he would molest me and rape my mother. When he was not being humiliated at work, my father was a loving and caring man. To me, my father was both a loving superhero who could do anything and an untamable monster who was capable of anything. What my father embodied and was infected by was Western civilization. What he tried to teach me was to survive against the big guns of empire. He tried to show me the power and dominance of 2,500 years of Western civilization was something to fear, revere, and strive for. He strived so hard that his progeny will survive our civilized world. And that is the worldview I chased that brought me to the United States of America. I knew deep down that what was within me and my mother was sacred and holy. It was a sacred gift from God and the creator of the universe. I assumed in my own naivety that Hollywood and the American ideal were additions to the sacred normal way of life. And what my father was pushing me towards would help me be a better human being. Being communal and living in community was something I just assumed. However, in relations with a peer, I found a superficiality that was foreign to me. It surrounds me, especially in my Western friends. I felt something was off, but still believed in the ideal of American life that my father told me about. I did believe in it until I came to Church of All Nations. Pastor in the community told me, "Paul, stop for a second, take a deep breath. You don't have to chase this ideal. It is not real, and if you chase it, it'll be more harmful for you than helpful. Who you are and where you come from is ancient and good." It finally dawned on me that what my mother and grandparents embodied was enough. Their connection to God was enough as God was within me. I am the land, the water, the trees, the sun, the solar system. And the way I interact with creation around me is how I interact with myself. We are trying to steward God's creation through our church body. We are trying to ground our church on the sacred land that we are on. As we all know, this land was stewarded by the Dakota people for thousands of years until it was colonized by traumatized European immigrants. To me, this permaculture project that we're doing is to remember who we are. We are striving to jog our bodily memory of the connection to the soil, water, and our bodies. We are trying to see that there is no distinction between the land and ourselves. As I have been part of the core learning group since the beginning, I have felt parts of myself waking up. As we spoke about the soil, I remember how I was once soil. I remember how the worms swam in and around me. I remember how my children plants and my grandmother trees put their roots into me, and how we nourished each other. As I remember the water, I remember being water. I feel the time of carving mountains into pebbles, how I took life with my strong waves back into the ocean and brought back nourishment to my children and the land. As I talked about the forests, I remember walking through them as a child, feeling the sense of awe and wonder when looking up at my grandmother and grandfather trees swaying in the wind. The ancestral trees seem to impart knowledge of who they are and where they come from, telling me stories of my own human ancestors. I also remember having leeches on my foot. This showed me that my own blood was part of the sustenance of the forest. Our permaculture project is not about the result. It is about the process. When we pour out our love, energy, and body into the land and into each other, we connect with each other and with ourselves. That is healing. When we move towards restoring our ancient forests, the ancient forest within us begins to sprout. As we interact with the land from seedling to harvest, we see the sacredness and reverence of our own children and grandparents. It was helpful to learn the different terms and processes of designing our property with permaculture principles. It helped me remember how my mother and grandfather would walk with me in our ancestral land. My grandmother would hold my hand as we walked out into the garden closest to the house. There we had small berries and medicinal fruit. She would say, "Eat this and eat that. Don't eat this, it's not for you, it's for our animals." And as we went into the forest, we could pluck the fruit from the trees and taste the richness and depth of life. There was abundance for all. We were always satisfied. My mother always told me to respect the forest. I did not just kick around a rock or throw garbage inside the forest. Being disrespectful to the forest is as taboo as slapping your own mother in the face. When we started to physically work on the permaculture design, it was surprising to see the shallow nature of the sod. It had hardly 2 inches of roots for the grass. On the surface, it looks lush and green, but its roots are floating over our Mother Earth. That is the same lack of rootedness that I feel in the majority culture we live in today. Nothing is sacred. Nothing is revered. Everything and anything is disposable, including our bodies and the bodies of our children. And as I healed, I deeply understand that my body is very sacred. I am not disposable. Each one of us is not disposable, but the exact opposite. We are sacred beings. Our children are not disposable. They are the progeny of a life that has existed for 13.7 billion years. We are blessed as their caretakers. As we care for them and teach them to be rooted well in our Mother Earth, we find healing. More so than us, our children will grow up feeling the rootedness of the land they walk on and play on. My ancestral land and forests were a deep part of what shaped me and made me who I am today. The depth and connection and sacredness you see in me was a gift and the teaching to the land that I come from. And the rootedness is my hope for our children. For them to have a new normal, a normal of touching the soil with our bare feet and feeling the heartbeat of our mother resonating with their own. The warmth and comfort of the land as it lay on top of our Mother Earth. Generations from now, when this land is an old growth forest, I know that when our great-great-great-grandchildren are playing in this forest, they will feel us. They will feel the love and sacrifice we made to make this a life for them. And they will have gratitude in their hearts for the strength of their ancestors. The strength to create a safe environment amid chaos so they can build upon what we created and move forward with their humanity. We will not die. We stand firm with our grandmothers of the earth and water. We advocate for our grandfathers of the sky as we heal and grow. We work hard for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren to come, and we will connect with our being that is over 13.7 billion years old. This is my faith in our permaculture project and our community. Led by our wonderful elders, Pastor John, Laura, and Pastor Jen, it's been a wonderful and humbling experience to have such wonderful mentors to come under and learn such sacred thinkings, teachings. Thank you to my church family and for our core group as well for supporting us as we spent our time learning and going deeper into understanding this way of life. I love you all and feel blessed to be able to share my story with you. Thank you.
Thanks to Paul and Sunbeck for wonderful testimonies. We happen to live in the same house too, so it's a coincidence. And the core team, Laura and John especially, for their outstanding leadership, guiding our congregation in this direction. We're talking about the sacred, and we learned in the Bible that the human body is sacred, that we are the temple of God. Well, the Bible also says that that our bodies come from the earth, from the soil. So if the human body is a sacred temple of God, then the building blocks of that body, the earth, the soil, the dirt, the dust, is also sacred. We live in a capitalist society that says nothing is sacred, everything is a commodity to be exploited for profit. Any idea, any system of thought that does not understand God and God's creation as sacred is wrong and antichrist. And even as we have to participate in it because we have no other system by which to eat and to make a living, we also at the same time are doing what we can to resist and overturn this system until we move into something natural. Just think about this. The degradation of the earth, the degradation of the environment, and the degradation of our physical and mental health are one and the same thing. Are we making the connection? Just look at ourselves. Look at our families. Look at our communities. Look at our churches. Look at our children. Capitalism has hoodwinked us to think that these are separate, discrete things. No, degradation, exploitation, and the ill health and the diseasedness of our life together are all one and the same thing. Jesus came to give us a completely different alternative than this way of life. And it is the way of Jesus Christ, the way of village renewal, the way of human togetherness in solidarity with all of God's creation. That's our prayer. These are the things that we've heard articulated today in word, in prayer, in song, in our hearts, and our speech, and so we're grateful for all of these gifts that we can harness together and then offer to the earth for our renewal. So for those things, let us say a prayer. Lord, we thank you for this day to remember your goodness, to remember that you are truly Lord of the earth, God of the universe. It takes a lot of understanding of history to figure out how we went from understanding and worshiping God and all that God has made as sacred to trashing the earth. There are a few people, O Lord, you know them well, who are trying to control the whole world as if they are the masters of the universe. We are so grateful for your scriptures, your holy word that says that the high and mighty will be cast down and thrown into the darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. We pray, Lord, that those on the margins will finally have their place on your good green earth, and just so that we can live and move and have our being, to have agency and not raw human greed and power. For these reasons and for this cause, we come together as a congregation. so that we can have life and life in abundance. Help us, O Lord, to turn our hearts to you, to turn away from artificiality, superficiality, the exploitative ways of our present system, and go back to all that you originally designed. Help us, O Lord, to be your true and authentic people, and help us in our own healing to bear witness to the good news of your healing of the earth. We pray these things in your holy name. Amen.